Back here on Downtown on a Thursday afternoon. We welcome back to the program our friend Gary Tanguay. Gary, I thought I would bring you on with your old friend Reba McEntire. How are you?
My girl, Reba. I recognize it. We go way back.
We did a show, I don't even know what year it was, sometime in the 80s, down at the Roundup, Cooper Friend's place with Reba McEntire. Man.
That's it. Yeah, say hello to Reba. Boy, she was impressed with us.
Oh, clearly.
Got on the bus and everything. Got on the bus, man. We were on the bus, Rick.
Oh, yeah, hanging out with Reba on the bus.
Well, but she also wasn't Reba then.
Right. She was not the Reba she would become.
Yeah, she had one hit.
Right.
And I can't even remember it, but climbing up the country charts on old Big Country Radio. God. Yeah, that was something else. We knew everybody before they were famous, Rich.
We did. I was trying to remember this the other day. Were you with me when we did the Bellamy Brothers show down there?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a good, those were some good boys.
Show.
Yeah.
They were great. Mo Bandy and
Joe Stampley, yes.
Joe Stampley. And then you ducked on the big ones. The big ones, you sent me down alone for Billy Crash Craddock. And you can have that one.
But Billy's was a good guy, right?
They're all good. They were all great. They were all fantastic. So polite. I mean, they were the country artists, they're just terrific.
I've said that before. I've so many country artists that I've had a chance to talk with and work with over the years, and only one or two that were not truly nice people, and they're both gone now, so I don't want to speak ill of Eddie Rabbit or Hank Snow. What?
God, Hank Snow, that is an old,
Hank was over at the Stacy's Country Music Festival over in Brewer with his ill-fitting toupee. And
of course he was.
Still angry that Colonel Parker had left him for Elvis.
Yeah, get over it, pal. I mean, I know. It's so bitter. Everybody gets so bitter in this business. I mean, even in sports. You know, no one, it's never enough, Rich. It's never enough. God, man, he did have a bad toupe.
Oh, yeah. That was you could see it.
What was his thing? What was his hit record?
Well, he had a bunch of them back in the early. I think I'm Moving On was probably the biggest one.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember Stacy's. We used to watch that at UMaine for entertainment purposes and not for the music.
It was a classic, though.
Oh, my God, it was great. We should make a movie about that or a play or something.
People would not believe how popular that was back in the day on Saturday nights for people who were outside the intended demographic.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, you had the people that took it seriously, then you had the rest of us.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, God.
All right, here you go. Here's a little Hank Snow for you. Come on,
that big eight-wheeler rolling down the track means a true-loving daddy ain't coming back because I'm moving on.
Yeah.
I'll soon be gone.
That is country twang at its best.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, country twang at its best.
Well, what have you been up to, Gary?
Well, kids, one daughter out of college, another son moving into college or leaving high school, going to college, and one going from 7th grade to 8th grade. So we had a lot of activity.
Wow, so you had two graduations?
Yeah, a couple of graduations, and just busy, you know, the kid stuff and sports and all that sort of stuff. Other than that, that's the month of May has been all about that. It's all about been graduations and gatherings and a birthday to yours truly. I am not revealing my age. I am a gentleman.
I will not reveal that either.
Dude, people can do the math. That's about it. You know, wrapped up teaching. I have to tell you though, if people are worried about the generation that lies ahead, don't be, because the kids I had at Emerson. Now, to get into Emerson, you got to have your act together. There's no doubt about it, and your parents have to have a couple of bucks, or you really need to get some aid. the price of college education is way, that's a whole other story. That's got to change. Has to change. But, like, see, I found myself, students need encouragement. Look, it's hard. It's really hard right now, especially in media, because I don't know what media is.
Mm.
I don't. You know, it's all changed. We know with Instagram and with social media and YouTube and YouTube influencers. And, you know, I was the other day, I mean, some of the people I do the, you know, the exercise thing in the morning, you know, on the bike. And I get, you know, all of these people I take classes from, they're all worth like millions of dollars because they're like social media influencers. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to teach that. I don't know if anybody does. But all you can do is tell these kids, put your best product out there. Be your best self on any screen or whatever you're doing. And just don't quit because they've been so beat up. Everybody has been telling them now how impossible it is. We've gone the other way. For so long, we had the too many, you know, everybody gets a trophy generation. And then it swung back to, I had some kids that were like, they just got beat up. Like, you never get, like, you know, they had professors telling them, you're not going to make it in this business. It's too hard. And, well, it is. It is too hard. You know, but I said, you got to be optimistic. You can't go in with a bad attitude. And I said, the only person that matters that believes in you is you. Because there are going to be people that don't believe in you, and there are going to be people that do believe in you. And it doesn't really matter. It's just you. And I just think this generation that's graduating from college now actually needs to be built up a little bit.
I think you're right on that, but they're great. You know, I always think when I hear people being cynical about kids, I always think of that line from The Breakfast Club where the assistant principal says to the custodian, the kids have changed. And the custodian says, kids haven't changed, Dick. You've changed.
Right. Oh, yeah. And he's right. You know, I just think... You know, every generation does things differently, right? They just do. They just do things differently. Now, it's obvious, it's technology. It's with technology. But, you know, my son, I've sat down and actually had conversations with him over the last 6 months that has surprised me, where, okay, he does get it. He actually gets it more than I do now. But you know, Rich, it's always been hard, I guess. It's just always been hard. I mean, if you talk to people that came out of World War II, that was hard. The Depression was hard. The 60s were hard. The 70s, when we didn't have any gas, that was hard. I mean, hell, probably the best generation was mine in the 80s, to be honest with you. And I just think kids need to be told you just can't quit. You can do it, but it's really hard.
Well, but it helps if you have an idea what you want to do. And I think, I don't know that we do the job we should in high schools in helping people find whatever that is, that passion. Because I've said to kids for years, you know, all the money in the world's not going to make you happy if you're doing a job you can't stand.
Well, that's true. And that you know that from the high school level. I do not. Because when I was at Emerson, everybody was pretty plugged in. That, you know, they knew they wanted to be in show business, whether it be radio or TV or something like that, along those lines. So, you know, you would know better than I. I do know that education has a hard time keeping up with technology in the mindset of young people.
Hmm.
For example, the class I taught was sports radio, and I said to the powers that be, this name is ancient because it's not sports radio anymore. It's sports content. It's sports performance. You know, and I said, everyone that wants to be in sports media, and there are a lot of kids that want to be in sports media and sports communication, and it's booming in many different ways. One of my old interns is now a bigwig at Amazon Sports with AWS. So it's not the traditional way that we know of it, but it's in many other ways. And I said, every kid that wants to be on camera, whether it's your camera phone or I don't care, should have to take a theater class. And I know you're a big proponent of this.
Absolutely.
They have to take a theater class where they go on stage and they have to act like a turnip. You know, I mean, I took some acting classes here in Boston I took some in New York where they say, find your inner animal. And I'm like, okay, you know, pick an animal. You know, the whole, depending on what acting method you believe in, it's like, okay, I'm going to be a wolf, you know, and go out there and be a wolf. So your inhibitions, like if you go on stage and pretend you're a turnip or a wolf, you could sit there and talk about the Patriots. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And I just don't think that academia has caught up to the needs of the kids. Because one of the things I've learned in, about kids and technology, I mean, I had some kids in my class. They had 40,000, 50,000 followers on their podcast.
Wow.
I'm like, I can't teach you anything. I mean, I had some kids who are really good because they've grown up in front of the camera. You know, they've been on a camera. They've been on a camera on their phone forever. So they're relaxed in front of the camera. So academia has to catch up, I think, with the kids, to be honest with you.
No, I think
and we've
got
to encourage this generation. Everybody's been getting dumped on enough. COVID sucked. It threw a lot of kids off, including mine. So that's my message. Cheer the kids on. Don't tell them how bad it's going to suck.
Gary Tangway with us here on Downtown. Well, let's talk a little sports. How about this Celtics team? We chatted with them a little bit. I think this is, I don't want to say a team of destiny, but boy, the chips have fallen in a pretty good way for this team throughout the playoffs.
I think they can beat Minnesota in six. I'm really worried about Dallas because Kyrie, when he wants to be, can be one of the top 10 players in the league. And he's there right now. And that scares the living heck out of me. How will he do in Boston? He's had trouble in Boston in the past. He seems to be a different guy right now because I think he has addressed his NBA mortality at the age of 31, that this is it for him, and he better make the most of it, and he has. Doncic is, I'm worried about those two. I think if they play Dallas, they could go seven in the Celtics. I'm going to say the Celtics win, but they're peaking at the right time, man. And I'm worried about I'm worried about Dallas a little bit.
Do they need Porzingis to win that series if it's Dallas?
It's interesting. I just heard Kendrick Perkins. Perk was talking on the Sports Hub down here to Mike and Tony Felger and Matt. And Perk thinks they do. Perk said he thinks they need Porzingis to win. I mean, and this guy knows a lot more than I do, considering he's actually been there. I don't think they do, but they can't play as lackadaisical as they have been. Because let's face it, they've missed a lot of tough games. All the teams they faced, the main star had injuries.
Yeah.
Right? So they can't afford to have droughts of like 0 for 12 from 3 and then win it in the last 2 minutes. Right? So that's where they're going to have to step it up a little bit. I love Tatum and Brown. I'm done trying to figure out who's more important to the team. I think they're both equally important in different ways, and that's why it's working. I think the backcourt's phenomenal. I mean, White and Drew, I think they're great. I think they can, but they got to step it up because they have just not. They beat teams they should beat. Let's face it. I mean, they were so much more talented than all these teams, right? They have to step it up against, I think it's going to be Dallas. They have to step it up against Dallas.
I'm encouraged that they took care of those teams quickly, though. They didn't let teams hang around for a six or seven game series.
Right, which is true, which is, you know, that's another thing. It's like, we need to praise the Celtics a little bit because we were always on their backs about not finishing games, not playing well in the final 2 minutes. Well, obviously, they've done that. You know, they did that in these games where, you know, they let Indy get out to, and then in the final, you know, game four, I knew they were going to win game four. I just knew it because of the way they had won games 1 and 3. I go, they're going to win these games. They're going to win it. No doubt. So you're right. They took care of business. It's just sometimes this Celtic team is the ugliest, most talented, highest performing team I've ever seen. I mean, sometimes, like, Rich, if you took, I was talking with Bob Ryan about this. If you took 5 plays from a Celtic game, like their 5 worst plays, and I just showed them to an alien, right? They go, what the hell is that? I mean, just sometimes they do things that I'm like, this is terrible, right? I mean, and then they go on a roll and totally make up for it and, you know, crush people. So, you know what I mean? I mean, there are just sometimes they look so damn ugly out there. But you can't, I think they have too much depth. You got to give them credit. You know, we expect so much too. Plus Boston, we always live in the past. Well, they're no Bird and McHale and Russell. And, you know, we got to lose that attitude. It's stupid.
Gary, what are your biggest memory? Cause I know you dealt with him through the years of Bill Walton.
I dealt with him not as much as I would have liked. But I dealt with him as a broadcaster, because when he was playing here, I was still up at UMaine. But I said to him, they said to me, okay, we got to get Walt. And I said, all right, he'll talk. They said, we need like 10 minutes. I said, fine. I asked one question, and he gave me like 10 minutes. He just went on and on and on and on. And was always very accommodating, loved Boston. He didn't like the ownership in Portland, playing with Bird, and he just loved it because it was the way the game was supposed to be played. You know, he and Parrish got along great. You know, Bill's going to come in 10 minutes a game, and he played, what, like 80 games that year. He played a ton. And, you know, of course, now we can joke about it now because it's all legal, but can you imagine the smoke that may have been billowing from the room of Bill Walton and Robert Parrish at the time? You know, because they both love that psychotropic herb that is now legal. You know, but Walton, you know, the thing about Walton is he was just one of those guys that liked to have fun playing basketball. It's really a shame that his legs, you know, his feet were disappeared. He just loved. I mean, he was the Grateful Dead. I mean, you know, all that stuff. I mean, just how he, like, Rick Carlisle that told the story about how Rick wanted to take his girlfriend who became his wife to a Grateful Dead show.
Oh yeah, what a great story that was.
What a great story. And then Bill said, just go to the back door and you'll meet a guy named such and such. And Carlisle says, we're on stage. My wife, soon to be wife, you know, watching. Then we're hanging out with Jerry Garcia and everybody at the end, you know, end of the night. Walter, the thing that was so great about Walton is he just reminded you it's supposed to be fun. You know, the games are supposed to be fun.
Absolutely.
And God, do we lose track of that?
Ain't that for sure. Absolutely. Gary, always good to talk with you, my friend. Happy belated birthday to you, and hope your summer goes well. But we'll catch up with you again before too long.
Richie, always a pleasure, my friend. Talk soon.
Thanks. You got it. Gary Tanguay with us on Downtown.